Group meeting, Sunday, 18th September, 1988. We are now coming to the end of the chapter on the Gita. It's one of the most remarkable philosophical, metaphysical, and religious poems of the world. Perhaps the most remarkable such poem. As you know, the Gita was supposed to be the teaching of Krishna to his disciple Arjuna on the battlefield. The two groups of cousins who were at war with each other. Apparently, stopped fighting whilst the Lord of the universe, incarnate in Krishna, delivered 18 cantos of teaching to his disciple Arjuna. It's poetic license on the part of the author of the Gita to suggest that. Things like that do not happen in actuality. But we have come to the point where Arjuna asks Krishna to reveal his own outward form. And the revelation was so terrific that Arjuna has to beg Krishna to resume his ordinary everyday form, which was as the charioteer of Arjuna. Now this symbolism of the chariot and the charioteer. The chariot represents the psychophysical organism, you the person in the world. The horses which drag that chariot are the senses. And the charioteer, in the real Hindu sense, of course, is the Atma itself. The transcendence which is embodied in you. That is the charioteer. Now the Arjuna, the man in the world, requests the vision of the actual form, the manifestation of the charioteer. And the charioteer says to Arjuna, you cannot see this form of mine excepting with the third eye. And he grants the third eye to Arjuna. You have heard me throughout the years sometimes mention something which I have called spiritual induction. Induction in the same sense in which a powerful magnet can just be moved over the above a piece of iron and magnetize it and convert it into a magnet. Now, when this spiritual induction takes place, teacher and pupil are in complete unity with each other in innermost consciousness. So the charioteer, which is transcendence, opens up this inner eye, which is no other than the holistic consciousness of the pupil who listens and therefore and sees the vision. Therefore Arjuna sees the vision of the manifestation of the total cosmos as presented through Krishna. And this total manifestation is something so terrific that Arjuna couldn't stand the strain of it. Remember that Arjuna, as the man in the world, is a person, a limited being, who functions primarily through his senses and the activity of his brain. But in holistic consciousness, one completely transcends this functioning in terms of the finite and the temporal, which is the mortal. And consciousness functions in terms of the infinite, the eternal, the immortal. It's something utterly transcends our ordinary everyday consciousness. And the psychophysical organism has to be fit and prepared to receive this incalculable spiritual voltage, so to say, or else the person might perish. Krishna, of course, is supposed to know that his disciple Arjuna is capable of standing this. And he does give him the vision. And the vision includes everything whatsoever, manifest as well as unmanifest. Everything that we call good, which we call evil, which we call worthwhile, which we call truth, which we call falsehood, everything is shown to Arjuna. Krishna says things like this: I am the gambling of the cheat, and the splendor of splendid things am I. I am death and the origin of all things to come. So you see, the totality which we can see through our intellects as such is presented to Krishna, to Arjuna, in actual reality. In other words, Arjuna wakes up to a totally new vision of the universe as such. And this is God. This is the Lord of the universe incarnate in the man. So, it is so terrific that Arjuna begs Krishna to resume his ordinary form as the charioteer of his chariot. And he also asks him to reveal, O God Supreme, be gracious unto me. I yearn to know thee who art from the beginning, for I understand not thy mysterious works. The universal process, the cosmos, are the mysterious works. Krishna says, I am all-powerful time, which destroys all things, and I have come here today to slay these men, the cousins who were the enemies of the Pandavas. The Pandavas means the five sons of Pandu, of whom Arjuna was the third. Even if thou dost not fight, all the warriors facing thee shall die. Arise, therefore, win thy glory, conquer thine enemies, and enjoy thy kingdom. The Pandava brothers were deprived of their kingdom by their cousins, the Kauravas. Through the fate of their karma, I have doomed them to die. Be thou merely the means of my work. Krishna says, I am all-powerful time. Time is the shadow of eternity. We ordinarily experience time. Exceptionally, people like ourselves might actually experience eternity. If we do, then everything that exists and is produced through time is seen and known by us. And we have to have the power to stand it. So, I have written here, "Indeed, time lays desolate all the worlds, for time is age, decay, and death. But time is also the sowing of the seed, its germination and sprouting, growth and fruition. There is no manifestation without time, and death the other life which leads to new life, which means life in movement, not life the timeless." But life in movement is life the timeless, activating and lavishly expending its energy in eternal beauty. Beauty for the third eye, the divine vision. But for the conditioned mortal, an unendurable terror, like the fire at the end of time, as Krishna says. The princes of the earth and the greatest warriors, rushing into thy mouths, terror-inspiring with their fearful fangs, caught between them, their heads crushed into powder. Now, this is an extraordinary statement. Well, it is my statement, but it is extraordinary insofar as, on the one hand, time is the destroyer, and on the other hand, time is the sower of the seed, because only through the time, the temporal process, that we human beings who are born and who grow up can catch a glimpse of that transcendence embodied in us and let it act as a seed which brings the living person to fruition as the fulfilled, perfected, purified human being. In other words, the perfected Holy One. So there are these two aspects to time. And time, on the one hand, is also the destroyer, for the very simple reason that unless the old is transcended through its complete dissolution, the new cannot come into being. Transcendence comes into being because that which is not fully representative of transcendence is in the way, and it has to be transmuted. And then the fulfillment of man as man, the human, the blissful creator, really takes place, comes into being. And the blissful creator does not mean, the term does not mean that that person will always be experience only pleasure and happiness and joy and so on. He will also experience all the dualistic opposites of pleasure and so on. But the state of bliss is a state which is ineffable. It is a state of utter peace. And it is that peacefulness which is the consequence of the realization of nirvana. Nirvana means the extinction of all that obstructs the transcendence from full, complete manifestation through the purified, perfected Holy One. The link which unites death to life, eternity to time, is wisdom, love. Those are the two aspects of the transcendent creative energy which unite the duals. They unite the duals in a way which produces an integral wholeness, which means the holy state, the perfected state, for us humans. For an animal, it would be different. For plants, again, it would be different. It is selfless, It is selfness, ignorance and sin, which wishes the truth, the actual what is, to be otherwise. Inevitably, the will of the Divine, Lord of Omnipotence, brings everything to fulfillment in its way. Not for me to obstruct or presume to improve it. The way of the unknown is the best way. The love of God brings me through numberless life-generating deaths to death with a capital D, the gift of God in which the I is liberated into the infinite unknown. You may remember I have explained before, all growth involves death. One dies out of the present state into the new state, as one grows, as we say. So this life-death pulse functions in that way throughout our lives. Organically, this is true. And when the final death comes, the organism, of course, is gone altogether. But the embodied transcendence within that organism is part and parcel, remains that same transcendence always. It is something like this. Here we are sitting in a room. This room is the room. When we all go out of the room, this room is still the same room. The room is like transcendence. And Krishna says, "Thou art dearly beloved of me." This was Krishna's plighted troth to Arjuna. "Will I, Arjuna, prove my love and die into Krishna?" You or I, the limited, imperfect human being as such, realizing the full meaning of the word human, die into transcendence. That the brain cannot picture, the brain cannot grasp that at all. But in innermost consciousness, you are awake to it. You are aware of it. This is the awakened, the fully awakened state, the Samma Sambodhi of the Buddhist, the moksha of the Hindu, the liberation, or whatever you like to call it, of him who has realized the perfected holy state. Vedavyasa, the author of the Gita, sang of the one total reality in rich measure. Krishna declared he was transcendence. He was the cosmic power and container in its wholeness, and he was the great wheel of life, the becoming process, which is the natural order. Such was the realization by the holy teacher Krishna Dvaipayana Vedavyasa. That was his full name. Now, I have already mentioned in the first two or three meetings where we considered the Gita that I do not think that Krishna and Arjuna were two separate persons. The author of the Gita, the man who wrote this, could not have written it unless he himself had realized holistic consciousness. In his state of holistic consciousness, he is Krishna. Krishna happened to be his personal name too. Krishna Dvaipayana means island-born, born in an island. Vedavyasa, the compiler. Vyasa is the compiler of Veda, the truth, the supreme truth. You see? So, in that transcendent state, he realizes the truth in its fullness, in innermost consciousness. Then he has to convey that to himself in the ordinary psychophysical state. And this state is the state which is represented by Arjuna. They may have been two different persons, but I think that it is far better for us who are concerned with the realization of the fulfillment of our human existence to look at it this way. You find in the Old Testament many examples, and the angel of the Lord spoke to so and so, he had a vision and all the rest of it. What is this angel of the Lord and so forth? It's no flapping fairy coming, dropping from the skies or doing anything like that. It is you yourself in that extraordinary, peaceful, ineffable condition of complete purity, complete peace and quiet. The brain has completely stopped talking. It is, you are in that state, and in that state your innermost consciousness awakens suddenly. If even for an instant, Saint Teresa of Avila, for instance, mentions this, that it lasts just for an instant. Now this is where we could disagree with the Christian mystical statements, because they say that it is just by the grace of God for just an instant. The grace of God, yes, has its activity present there, but it does not last for just an instant, unless you yourself are not capable of holding that state of consciousness for more than a single instant. The Buddha says outright, he can enter into this state as he wishes, when he wishes, and for as long as he wishes. But of course the Buddha statement also has to be qualified, because in one of the earlier discourses in the Majjhima, number 6 or 7, somewhere there, the Buddha says 7 days. He can stay in that state for 7 days and nights. After all, a person in a physical human organism, which is an animal organism, must of necessity feed, eliminate, breathe, rest, and all the rest of it. And so, if you exceed the possibilities of your own particular organism, then you will die. This has been known in India right in recent times. Some of these yogis entering a state of meditation which touches the ultimate depths that the human can ever touch have been found dead under the tree. That is simply because they didn't wake up in time. You must wake up in time. Through the ages, the many have constantly battled for the assertion and preservation of separate selfhood. The few, seeing selfness as the very root of evil, extirpated this root. Urged and sustained by their vision of transcendence, they too battled the epic battle sung in the Mahabharata. Strange was the composing and reciting of this poem, this allegory myth, vaster than the vast. I say I have written vaster than the vast because the Mahabharata is composed of more than 90,000 verses. That is more than 7 times the whole of the Iliad and Odyssey put together. I don't know just how long Aurobindo's Savitri is. His poem Savitri is an extraordinary poem of a sort which is similar to the Gita. But I don't know its exact length. Stranger still was the narrative of the fighting to the blind king Dhritarashtra, who was the father of the Kauravas, by his charioteer. For through the favor of Vedavyasa, he received divine vision to see the events while they were actually taking place and relate them to the sovereign. Set in the very midst of the battlefield, between two great armies, is delivered the teaching embodied in the Gita. In a sense, our life here is the actual physical organism is the battlefield. The activity of the senses, the brain, and all the rest of it. And we are dualistic by nature. We bear the impress of that dualism in the very structure of our brains, because the brain stem, which controls the ordinary functioning of the whole body, including respiration, procreation, and so forth, you see. Is surrounded by the reptilian part of the brain, what is called the R complex, R standing for reptilian complex. And the point is that whilst, of course, this is what I say, the scientists say different things. They say that this is the cause of all the aggression and fear and so forth which you experience. I say no, that the brain, like the whole organism, is only the apparatus through which this somewhat universal psychical atmosphere of conflict and war and struggle and selfness and all the rest of it, violence and so forth, functions. I think, you'll never be able to tell me, because it may take another century before the scientists discover that what I have said is really true, that the organism is only the apparatus, just like a bulb is the apparatus through which the electric energy functions and gives light. Similarly, this psychophysical organism is the apparatus through which the devil on the one hand and God on the other hand are in conflict and struggle for expression. And we, as human beings, have this power of choice. Which shall we choose? To go this way or to go that way? The good way or the wrong way? The pure way or the evil way? That is our choice. And having made that choice, we have to abide by it. When we do not abide by it, the hound of heaven jumps at us. He not merely barks, but he bites us. I know something about this through my own life experience, how the hound of heaven functions. And one comes back to the right path, so to say, one's vocation in life. The vocation, the supreme vocation in life for any and every human being is to realize the full meaning of his humanness, to become the perfected Holy One. Now, in the field of the soul, in deadly strife, blooms the lone immortal flower of life. You are the field, and the flower is you, and you yourself are the singer of the flowering of transcendence in you. And the rest of the chapter is not specially important in this connection, because it only says states that the different teachers suffered death in their different ways. However perfected a Holy One may be, death of the organism is an inevitability. It has to come. We meet in this room. We have to go out of the room and leave the room alone. So you see, this which is the room, the living person, which is the room in which transcendence functions for a while, this way and that way, or just the right way, or sometimes just the wrong way, as in certain cases. When this thing dies, then transcendence is liberated. Don't be frightened, it's a talking clock in my pocket.